The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
And so let's look forward to a feast of football. Hopefully it'll be as enjoyable as the World Cup in Qatar was 18 months ago. But the Euro 2024 begins tomorrow evening. And to preview it, we're joined by Miguel Delaney, chief football writer with The Independent, Gavin Cooney, sports writer with the42.ie. And first, Tony Cascarino. And I'm going to start, Tony, with France, because having lost the World Cup final on penalties to Argentina, given how good they have been consistently for so many years, should we be regarding France as the favourites to win this tournament?
Well, Matt, they've always had the talent. I always feel that with France, their biggest thing that goes against them is they can be quite complacent. And obviously, Kylian Mbappe is an outstanding player, Matt, that, you know, he's just gone to Real Madrid, and we know how good he can be for them. But there's a strange partnership in that, because Saliba, Matt, probably won't get the nod, and they go up of Meccano, and Konate of Liverpool will probably play at the heart of their defence. But they're an interesting team, Matt, because they always seem to reinvent themselves. They can find ways of winning. They have pace. Certainly, they use some of the old school players they've had before. And also, they have the youth. They have, you know, the boy Warren Zaïre-Emery, who's a real kid, Matt, but coming to the French team and done really well. I only think the France will, if they don't do well, Matt, it's because they do what the French team do very often. They just don't play to their full ability because they're a very dangerous side.
But Gavin, they also have Griezmann continuing to be excellent as he drops further back during his career. But what about things like Varane being gone at centre-half, Lloris being gone in goal? Does that necessarily weaken them?
I don't think so, Matt. They've lost, obviously, a good bit of leadership with Varane and with Hugo Lloris leaving. But you, as Tony says, the fact that William Saliba of Arsenal is not guaranteed a starting place ahead of the likes of Konate and Upamecano of Bayern Munich shows their depth there. And Lloris will be replaced in goal by Mike Maignan of AC Milan, who Irish fans will remember from that kind of almost unbelievable save from Nathan Collins back at the start of this Euros qualification campaign. So he's arguably better. So it's very hard to see any weaknesses in the squad, you have to say. They made a mess of the last Euros because they tried to integrate Karim Benzema. And it didn't quite work. That was the last time Didier Deschamps was going to do anything off anyone else's advice. Benzema was bombed out of the team, and then they made it to the World Cup final. So I think they're just about the favourites in the betting market, and rightly so in my view.
Okay, and then Miguel Delaney, do you concur that this French team is the team to beat?
Yeah, and they have been for about 8 years. I mean, France, well, it's interesting, I think we said this in the show before, for the three areas in the world that produce more footballers anywhere: Sao Paulo, South London, and Paris. But Paris produces even more and a greater well of talent, and the French seem to see the benefit of that. It's just this endless stream of sheer quality, and to the point they populate every other European league, if not their own, in terms of kind of, because so many players go so young. Hence, this squad looks as strong as ever. But just on the other side of that, I have a bit of a feeling for Portugal as well. I mean, actually, that's become a view over the last few weeks that isn't as kind of, isn't as clever as you would think, because a lot of people are now saying it because of the realization that Portugal have, at least in this squad, almost as much depth as France. And even there had been an issue with Cristiano Ronaldo. He was being phased out of the team in 2022. He was dropped that game against Switzerland. But Martinez actually brought him back in and kind of almost made the political issue of Ronaldo a non-issue for the squad. They've got a good chemistry and they look really strong. So I have to say, I've been in all the previews I've had to do and calls like this, I've been kind of wavering between France and Portugal. But France, if everything goes normally and they just kind of play, as Tony said there, to something like their best, you would think they should have enough, especially with Mbappe. But I think Portugal are very dangerous.
Okay, well, Gavin, was the ease with which they swept Ireland aside the other evening anything to go by?
I don't think you can take Ireland as much of a representation of the quality that will be at these Euros, sadly. But they were very impressive, you know, and Ronaldo was brilliant, especially the first of his two goals will belong in the highlights reel at the end of his career. To be honest, he's continued to score goals in the Saudi Pro League. Now, you can roll your eyes and say, look, that's not a very high level. But the likes of Benzema, Sadio Mane, Roberto Firmino are all out in the Saudi Pro League as well. And none of them are scoring at the rate that Ronaldo is. Portugal have depth in every position. They have world-class players in every position. They can mix it up as well. I mean, they can go direct and go long and benefit from that. We saw it a little bit against Ireland as well. So I would agree with Miguel that they're real contenders. And they've also got the benefit of a handy draw. Turkey, Czech Republic and Georgia in the group. And if they top that group, they're not scheduled to meet another group winner until the semi-final. So they've got a fantastic chance of winning what would be a second European title out of three.
Tony, Ronaldo's playing even in older age than you managed as a scoring centre-forward.
Well, like myself, he took a lesson off me, Matt, and learned how to keep himself really fit at the tender age of, 38? Look, they're phenomenal. That's my team I would pick to win it, Matt, because, as the boys have said there, the talent, you know, and you can put him in midfield as well, Matt. You can have Paulinho at Fulham, who a lot of clubs are wanting to take, and you think of also, you know, another young lad, Yael Neves, who's a 19-year-old kid. They've got loads of experience. They're a big side. If you think of their forward line, Matt, you can go Fernandes, you can go Ronaldo, then you can go Bernardo Silva, and you can go Felix. You know, you're just looking at one talent after another. So, Matt, he is just an exception, Ronaldo, because to see him, the goal he got against us the other night, the first one, was just a phenomenal goal. That is him. Look, he's obviously lost a yard or two, and rightly so if you get into your sort of late 30s. But even his ability to get his ball out the feet and hit strikes like he can and free kicks, he was unlucky earning a game with a free kick. He's just a unique talent, Matt, that makes the absolute most out of what he's got. And I think they're the team. If you picked me the best value of the prices where the bookmakers go, I'd say Portugal all day long. I think Martinez has been really shrewd how he's handled the experienced ones and the younger ones coming in, blending it really well. And at the end of that, they've got people like Diaz at Man City. You just go on and on, Matt.
Okay, but what about Ingerland, Tony? Given that there seems to be an enormous amount of attacking talent in England, and also you've got Rice and Bellingham behind in midfield, or could it be that the defence will be in Achilles' heel and that Southgate will continue to play with the handbrake on and not maybe get the most out of these English players?
Yeah, Matt, look, there's a lot of pressure over here with the way England will go. There's some people that want them to go overly adventurous, and I think if you go too attack-minded and your defence suffers, if teams counter, they're going to punish a weaker back four, because they have had a number of injuries. People like Luke Shaw haven't played for a long time, Matt. Obviously, Maguire's not there. And you look at John Stones, he's been injured quite a lot this season. Personally, Matt, I think this is Gareth's biggest test as a coach, because England have been in positions where they've got the lead over the opposition. They haven't been able to see it through. And then in the second half, they've been caught, you know, like they did against Italy, like they did against Croatia. And I think, if anything, Gareth has to show that he can really rub shoulders with the very best coaches and get something more out of this team. Because if you said to me the three teams with the best forward line, I'd go France, England and Portugal. The teams we just talked about have got the most dangerous front lines. And England have that. But how he blends that is going to be really important, Matt. Because I know they lost to Iceland, but it was quite alarming that they really couldn't hurt Iceland at all in that game, even though it's the final before you go to the actual tournament.
Okay, Miguel, what about that issue about him playing with the handbrake on, that he has never let an England team full of attacking talent flower properly?
Well, I think there's an interesting thing there, and touched on two things that Tony said. I mean, first, I think there is genuinely an argument that Southgate, conservatism has cost him, especially in the biggest games. I mean, really, let's be fair, England actually should be coming to this tournament as defending champions. They couldn't have had a better opportunity at the end of Euro 2020, 1-0 up in the final, a home final against Wembley, a home final in Wembley, and they actually 1-0 up with, 27 minutes to go. And it was Southgate's conservatism, it felt, that kind of ceded the game and ceded the advantage to Italy in the initiative. Now, it's why this squad is so interesting, but also, I mean, with potential flip sides to it as well. Because, I mean, if you look at Southgate, one of the positives of that conservatism, I would say, is that over 8 years, he steadily built a culture. And I don't think that, I mean, for all England's kind of, again, another country with this conveyor belt of talent, for all that, it shouldn't be overlooked that he did change the culture that was so toxic around England. And I think it's changed the outlook as well. That was important. But it's amazing. Like, they've gone 8 years now building up to this point where it looked like going off 2022 and going off 2020, where the only remaining issue with England was maybe you'd say, well, they have to beat France. That was a team they lost to in 2022. But now suddenly half that squad from 22 is gone. Like it's 13 out of 26, or just 12 of those are facing their first tournament. So it's almost like it's a team with some of that experience, but also with a lot of tournament inexperience. And allied to that as well, and this, I suppose this is where the conservatism point is so important. So, I mean, so much of that attack has been kind of built in kind of these totemic figures that have been there and know each other, while at the same time, Selke has suddenly lost his defence. I mean, they could go into Sunday's game against Serbia with basically three of the usual four not there, and also four right-footers, depending on Luke Shaw. That brings uncertainty. It does look weak, or at least kind of maybe not ready. And then at the other side of that, well, he's added more uncertainty because he's got rid of loads of, you know, prominent attackers from Grealish, Rashford, Sterling, Mason Mount. People know the team well. And I mean, that does speak to Southgate's abundance of talent here. But it also, there is a risk to it. And I think that feeds into what Tony was saying about the Iceland game. If it looked like that attack didn't really know each other.
Well, if the attack doesn't work, Gavin, you'd have to fear from it. And also, would you worry about that they have a goalkeeper who occasionally does the heroics, but you really wouldn't necessarily want to be putting the house on?
Maybe, yeah. I actually think Pickford has done pretty well for England, and he's coming off an impressive season at Everton, in which, in fairness, Everton kept him very, very busy. I think the defence is very weak. I think missing Luke Shaw is going to be a huge problem for them. And it's a kind of a tension within the whole setup, is that Southgate prioritises defence over attack, and the defence is much weaker in England's case than the attack. So I think there's actually big questions around them. Miguel is right, like, England should have won that Euros. They all but one of those games was played at Wembley, partly because here in Ireland we generously gave up our games so they could have more home games throughout the tournament. And there are a couple of question marks for Southgate to answer. They've never actually beaten anyone much good when it matters at a big tournament. What he's done really well is he's stopped England losing games that they shouldn't be losing. Okay, Iceland, obviously, at Euro 2016 stands out and so forth. But they've had a series of pretty soft draws at the previous tournaments. And then they've lost to France, they've lost to Italy, lost to Croatia when it really mattered. So there's a lot of question marks over Southgate. And I think he knows that this is his last chance to answer them, because he said it himself in an interview with a German media agency, Bild, that if we don't win this, it'll be a failure and I'll probably not be around after it.
Okay. What about the hosts, Germany, Tony? They've been pretty gank in recent years, but have there been signs that they're turning things around in the last few friendlies?
Well, I mean, Matt, always you look at host nations and you always know they're going to go well. Because they just do. The backing of the fans. You know, you don't have to look over the history of football to see how many teams. Argentina, we've seen South Korea do well. Many others, Matt. And I expect Germany to go well. Is there a new sort of Germany? Well, I would say that Musiala's exciting. I thought Florian Wirtz as well. He's another exciting player from Bayer Leverkusen. Set up well, Toni Kroos in midfield. What better midfielder could you have going into a tournament, Matt, that the experience of him. And, you know, you think of people like Kimmich. You know, they just have a lot about them, Germany. I actually feel they've had a really bad couple of decades in some ways. I don't mean because they have had some success, but actually they don't resemble the great German teams of the sort of 70s and 80s. And I expect them to go well, Matt, being the host team. And, look, Nagelsmann, the manager, is very offensive. He's always tried to play a style that creates chances. Havertz has a decent enough season at Arsenal. So they've got enough players, Matt. They could be one of the surprise packages in the Euros, actually do better than most people are writing Germany off completely, Matt, which I think it's wrong. I think they'll make the quarterfinal semis quite comfortably.
OK, but where, Gavin, do you think does Havertz fit in? Does he play up front or does he play behind Füllkrug? Or how is Nagelsmann going to set up this team?
Havertz will almost definitely be the out-and-out number nine in this team. He won't be left-wing back, which was one of Nagelsmann's kind of more hair experiments during one of the friendly tournaments.
Okay, sorry, we'll just, Gavin is dropping out there. So actually, I'll move to Miguel on this particular one in relation to centre forward, and also the influence of Toni Kroos back in the team for his last hurrah, retiring at the end of the tournament. How much is that going to change Germany's way of playing and its prospects, Miguel?
Well, I think that's a very interesting thing with Julian Nagelsmann, the manager, and especially when he comes to the question like Havertz, in that Nagelsmann works in such a way that, well, players mightn't have fixed positions. That could change per game, per half, maybe even per situation in games. He is very tactically flexible. Maybe that has led some questions in his club career where he maybe didn't do as much as Bayern Munich as he should have, although they did then want him back this summer. But for the moment, and it should be stressed that this is all fairly limited evidence so far, and also friendlies for a host nation, but it does feel like he's found something that has been missing for the past few years. They almost had the kind of Hansi Flick stayed too long after winning the 2014 World Cup, and that generation stayed on too long. Not Hansi Flick, sorry, Yogi Love. Then Flick just, for a few reasons, didn't work out. There was talk he didn't bring the same staff as he had at Bayern Munich. And so Germany went through a bit of an identity crisis. It does feel like, at the very least, Nagelsmann has given them an identity back. So I'm actually just outside the Munich Stadium here, where, I mean, tomorrow, the opening game is tomorrow night. There's been a lot of Scots in Marienplatz and around the place. But you can feel the atmosphere building for Germany. I think there does feel an optimism about it again. I mean, and it's interesting what Toni said in that regard, that where you associate the German teams of the 80s and 90s, where essentially they were almost the default competitors for the tournament, the team you had to beat. It's almost like France have taken that mantle now, and Germany have become almost something a bit like France in the past, where there's a kind of mercurial uncertainty about them. But there is optimism now again, and they feel like they've got a good young team that has a defined way of playing. And actually, I wouldn't quite have them as high as Portugal or France, but I wouldn't be surprised if they win it.
Okay, and Gavin, you're back with us. What about Scotland's chances in this group? A tough opening game against Germany tomorrow evening. And then Hungary, who are putting a lot of political store in doing well because of what their President Orban wants. And Switzerland. Hungary, of course, were beaten by us in a friendly recently. Can Scotland get out of that group?
Yeah, it is possible that Scotland get out of that group. Switzerland are not exactly the force that they were even at the last Euros when they went all the way to the quarterfinals. Scotland, amazingly, have never been out of a group at a tournament, either a World Cup or Euros, which is kind of remarkable. They've got a chance here, but it is diminishing with every passing week, it feels, because they had such momentum in the qualifying campaign, won five of their first six, including Spain at home and Norway away. But since then, the results have really dried up. I think they've only beaten Gibraltar in their last seven friendlies. They have injury problems as well. The wing-back Aaron Hickey will be a big miss for them. They've lost the striker Lyndon Dykes. They won't have a huge amount of goals in the team. Like, the goal scoring, they will rely for goals on Scott McTominay of Manchester United. So it is within Scotland's grasp, I think, to squeeze into the knockout stages. Maybe it's one of the third place teams, probably behind Hungary and obviously Germany. So it is possible, but I actually don't think it's very likely.
Okay. Miguel, you always love Spain, given your heritage. In the so-called group of death, starting against Croatia and against Italy and Albania. But while this may be the group of death, is it teams with not the same quality of the past? Italy not as good, particularly in central defence, as they were when they won the 2020 tournament. Croatia, brilliant midfield, but all well into their 30s now. And Spain, who just really haven't been the same in recent years.
I think that's exactly it. It's basically, it's a group of death, but they're three middling teams. Kind of that kind of reputation for the group has come from the reputation of the countries. And it is one of those where Albania could surprise people. I mean, the thinking when that group came out was almost, regardless of the level of these three teams, they'd all beat Albania and therefore all go through. I think there's a real capacity for Albania to do something surprising there. I've spoken to their coach, who's the former Arsenal left-back, Silvinho, and they've built a kind of a real unity around the squad. This isn't their first tournament, but they do have that kind of almost, I'd almost say actually the Irish spirit of you know, it's a relatively underrated team, or the people are maybe dismissing and going to a tournament with almost a club spirit about them. And that could have an effect, because as you say, I mean, I actually think Italy of the three are probably the weakest, but they have maybe the best manager in Spalletti. So it's going to be interesting to see whether he can, you know, do something in the limited time before the tournament. I mean, that's the other thing. This is the shortest ever break there's ever been between a Champions League final and the start of a Euros. So it just shows how squeezed everything is. Croatia, they have experience. They've got a decent generation coming through, but it doesn't look, it feels like they've got to kind of maybe draw too much out of established players again. But we've said that before. And Spain basically have They've got a midfield, although missing one of them through long-term injury. And they've got Morata, who has actually evolved as a striker. But other than that, there's a lot of middling players around. And all three of those teams, they look like a classic case of, yes, if they get it together, they could potentially go on a run in the way that happens in tournaments. Spain had a little bit of that in Euro 2020, actually. And Italy's tournament then seems so distinctive now, given what they've done on their side. But they could also... it could go very badly. And that's where I think there's a potential for Albania to do something.
Okay, last word to you, Tony Cascarino. How much should we be looking forward to this competition? Is it set up to give us even better football than the last World Cup did?
Yeah, I'll say about getting better, Matt. I mean, look, the competition will decide itself. I think it'll be a better Euros than the one what was in England when Italy won it last time, Ryan, Matt. I think there's a lot of exciting teams. There's not a new talent coming through. I'm looking to see, you know, we didn't really touch on Italy, but I'm looking... to see Chiesa again, Matt. Federico Chiesa, who's a hell of a talent. That's what I felt was Italy's main man. But there's young players, you know, Ramos at, with Portugal. You've got Verts at Germany and others, Matt. Bellingham, you know, we're looking at a really exciting tournament with lots of managers. We've touched on a few of them, Matt. There's a lot of attack-minded managers in this competition. So I think it'll be a thrilling watch from start to finish.
Oh, so looking forward to it. It all starts tomorrow evening. Tony Cascarino, Gavin Cooney from the 42.ie and Miguel Delaney, chief football writer of The Independent. Thank you all so much.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.